You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, August 29th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, not in the literal nor metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building, nor are we in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. But instead, I am in a secret remote location, preparing for Labor Day weekend. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And ostensibly to give a movie recommendation, Matthew Film Guy. Also on the program today, it's that time of year, folks, that time of off year, if you will. Got to start paying attention to some Senate races. We're also, of course, only 12 days away from the New York State primary elections. I don't know. Maybe it's, I almost got hit by the Woo Zephyr Teach Out bus last night in Columbia County. So maybe that's why I get the sense that there's a certain amount of energy around this race. But also, President Obama, no strategy yet in terms of whether they're going to bomb ISIL. Echoing, I guess, what I said yesterday. Maybe he's just waiting for me. Also, Corbett in Pennsylvania must be feeling the heat, folks. Going to expand Medicaid to 300,000 people in Pennsylvania. Very good news. Also on the program today, no criminal charges over the Uzi shooting at the gun range. Just an industrial accident. And new reports that ISIS has been waterboarding many of the journalists that they've been holding as part of their torturing of these people. I wonder where they got that idea. Wonder where the idea to waterboard came from. Only savages. Only savages would torture their prisoners that way. Only savages, ladies and gentlemen. Just a reminder, this program relies exclusively on your support. It is only members that make this show possible. So if you have the financial ability to support this program, please do. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. We'll be right back.
your mind.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday. You know what that means. It means Cliff Schechter. But when Cliff Schechter comes on, you know what that means. It means the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Cliff Schechter of Libertas LLC. Hello, Cliff.
Hello, Sam. I was trying to sing where they couldn't hear it, so I was guessing. And, you know, I have a wonderful singing voice, and I want everybody to experience that. On Friday before a long weekend of drinking.
Yes. Now, are you excited for Labor Day weekend? It's both. I don't know. It's both sad and obviously nice. You get a long weekend. Hopefully, most people do. And it's also a little bit sad because, of course, it's the end of summer.
That's true. That is true. So it's sad in that way. Although the summer's been a nice one. That Arctic weather coming on down to us. What was it called again? The polar vortex?
Uh-huh.
I'm a big fan. I like the polar vortex. I probably won't as our weather gets crazier and crazier, and we're all forced to live on some sort of an island somewhere or, you know, some planetoid. But in general, I'm excited. We're going up to Lake Erie. Well, we can't drink the water up there, as you know, because there's lots of algae. But we can go up there and swim. So we're doing that. That's kind of cool.
Now, my understanding is that algae, people are concerned about that as a function of global warming. Is that right?
That's actually true. I mean, I shouldn't make light of it. I mean, we're having these conversations about, you know, drought going on out west because of weather changes. And, of course, there's the situation where they were trying to take water away from people in Detroit. But in Toledo, they actually had a situation because a lot of their water supply ends up coming from Lake Erie and getting clean. But when there's algae in it, apparently, I'm not a scientist, but it doesn't sound like a good thing. And so people were not allowed to drink the water there. Or I guess it happened in West Virginia with that big spill of that sort of ash crap that comes from coal mining. We really do like despoiling our water, don't we?
Yeah, it's
at least it's not a natural resource, so that's good.
Atreos has been for some time just talking about, like, you know, what happens in some of these areas, particularly out west, obviously, and California, the Southwest as well. What happens when we run out of water? I mean, what happens? What happens when we start to run out of water?
I have two words for you. Mad Max. Ever see that?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So, I mean, I'm being facetious, but I don't know. I mean, I think there could be riots. Yeah, I think it could get bad. Water is water. It's pretty basic, and we all need it. I don't know. When you look at the various situations out west and then also what happened with Lake Erie, I mean, these changing temperatures, I think there's all sorts of ways to be, you know, that were beyond just ocean level rising and some of the more obvious things that people haven't necessarily thought about that are going to be bad due to what we're doing to our climate. But luckily, if I turn to the right channel on TV, it's not happening. So I can just do that and put my fingers in my ears and go, la, la, la. I'm sure it'll all work out.
As long as Fox News is there, we'll always have the opportunity to deny. But all right, let's get down to brass tacks. We're just about to get post Labor Day, and Labor Day, of course, is post Labor Day is, of course, when people start to theoretically start paying attention to elections. What do you think? I mean, the latest polling, these models, integrated models, are starting to suggest that just slightly Democrats are it's looking like Democrats may not hold the Senate. Now, of course, there's nothing new, but I think it's – I don't know. I've seen some of the models have dipped from like 47% to 45%.
You've got Nate Silver and the guys over at Upshot at the New York Times. They seem to have it, I think. I haven't looked for the last couple of days, but in the range you're talking. Sam Wang, who is also is famous because of this stuff, right? He's at Princeton, I believe, has said 70% chance the Democrats hold it. So, but I'm not, I'm not a skewer of polls like Republicans. I'd like to objectively incorporate information and then actually come to an unbiased, decision. What I think, I think it's going to be really close right now. For a while there, I really thought the Democrats would hold probably 52, seats or so. I think right now we're looking at, I think it may be a 50-50 Senate with Biden tie-breaking. That's what I'm hoping. Not that I'm hoping, I'd rather the Democrats hold more seats than that, but it's looking like at least, it's looking very difficult in those three open seats. Although who knows, right? I think Rick Wyland's running a great populist campaign in South Dakota, and Mike Brown is pretty corrupt. There could be a surprise in store there. We nominated after Walsh got out of the race, Amanda Curtis, who's supposedly phenomenal in Montana. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, they don't have any chance. Well, neither did Heidi Heitkamp and neither did John Tester, who I think were each given like a 5% chance of winning or something along those lines by Nate Silver, and both won. So these things happen. There usually are one or two big surprises in any election cycle. So I'm hoping that, we get one of those where Progressive wins. Obviously, I'm still in the ball game, looking at what's going on due south of me with Mitch McConnell, who likes the Koch brothers a lot. Another in a long line of gaffes that's helping, keep it so that he might lose, which, I still think he's going to. So
let's talk about that Mitch McConnell thing for a moment, because when I heard this audio, now, obviously, I'm not a good test case for this type of stuff, right? But when I heard that audio or listened to some of it, I was like, I'm not surprised by any of this. Nothing I'm hearing from this surprises me in any shape or form. I mean,
it's not surprising in the slightest. No, I don't think that's the value of it. The value of it is that on the issue of the minimum wage, Alison Lundgren Grimes is actually running a pretty populist campaign and really sort of pointing out how Mitch McConnell has voted against it, God knows how many times, and unemployment insurance, God knows how many times. I mean, this is one of her ads on TV, and yet he's managed to become a multimillionaire while he's served in the Senate. How did that happen?
How does that happen?
Well, when you have no insider trading laws for a while and you magically find out that big things are happening, or you know things are going to happen because of legislation you pass, it's amazing what you can do then with that information if you have access to the stock market, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm going with that. I'm sure there's other things too. I'm sure magically, there were infrastructure projects near property he owned, so that the value went through the roof. I mean, I haven't looked at how he became a millionaire, but these are my guesses. This is how Republicans generally do it, and some Democrats, many Democrats, sadly too, to be honest. But yeah, how does it happen? Well, so she's going after him on that, and to her credit, I mean, she's running a very populist campaign, and as we know, and as you and I discuss on this show all the time, even people who vote Republican, most of them believe the minimum wage should go up.
Right.
Rural white voters are very much in favor of raising the minimum wage. Most of them believe in unemployment insurance. So these aren't things the Republicans have managed to turn, you know, white rural and white older voters against, you know, the way they have sometimes when it comes to taxes and some things like that. So she's running a very – so that's where it helps, because you've now got audio of him saying he's going to shut down the government. You've got audio of him saying that when he went to a part of – I believe it was in eastern Kentucky when he said, it's not my job to bring jobs here, which is probably one of the dumbest things he's ever said. And now you've got audio of him saying, you know, absolutely he's not going to raise the minimum wage, and he's not going to you know, pass unemployment insurance and all these other things. Well, I if I were them, I would do a full-out ad just in Mitch McConnell's voice. That's it, you know, nothing else. I think it tells the story. And I think Kentucky, the wealthier parts in the middle, this sort of golden triangle, as they call it, where Frankfurt, the capital, is, and then on one side you've got Louisville, and the other side you have Lexington. But in the eastern part and the western part of the state, western part, a lot of farming, eastern part, a lot of coal mining, you know, they've been hugely hit hard economically. And these are ways that she could, I think, woo voters away from McConnell. So, you know, let's see. That's where I think it hurts, Sam. I don't think it hurts that anybody's shocked. It's just, it's hard for him to kind of fudge it the way he tries to fudge everything when you've got him in his own words.
And do you think this, I mean, what is your sense about this whole Jesse Benton thing? I mean, we have a state senator in Iowa who is... who's going to jail for taking $73,000 in a bribe. But somebody was on the other end of that bribe, right? And it sounds like it was Jesse Benton, who just happens to be Mitch McConnell's campaign manager. Now, I don't think there's anybody out there in the world who's going to vote against somebody because of their campaign manager. But if your campaign manager...
But it's part of a theme.
Well, that's part of the theme, and it's also, if your campaign manager in the last 8 weeks before an election is spending more time trying to get himself out of jail than working on your campaign, that's going to hurt your campaign, I would imagine.
Yeah, having your campaign manager running your campaign from jail is difficult. interestingly enough, but, you know, he's also married to a member of the Paul family. I don't remember who, Jesse Benton. He's married in. So that should be interesting for Rand come closer to presidential election time to explain that one. But there's no doubt it hurts, because if Jesse Benton would have to leave, the whole reason McConnell hired him is for that connection to the sort of the Tea Party, you know, libertarian-esque, which it really isn't, but
right. Let's
just say that, part of their party, the pretend libertarians. And if he's gone, that may, you know, it makes it a lot more difficult. McConnell doesn't speak their language very well. So yeah, that hurts. I mean, you know, people forget this, that campaigns, political campaigns, are not just about, you know, your day-to-day, what you're actually doing in your ads and your field. A lot of it's psychological warfare, you know, and you get hit hard with one of your strategists under the pressure of potentially going to jail. My guess is he's not going to do his job as well. It also adds to the theme, which is McConnell is corrupt and takes all sorts of money from all sorts of interests and has become a millionaire while sitting there only earning, you know, 100-something. And when I say only, I don't mean that he doesn't make a lot of money, because he does, but it's not the kind of money that generally turns you into a multi-millionaire. And so there's a lot of ways to go after this guy, and you know, and now it seems that those he surrounds himself with are corrupt too. So I think that it doesn't help him. I mean, it certainly, you know, let's see how much it hurts. I hope a lot, but it definitely doesn't help. And again, this is going to be a close race, and there could be turnout issues, because his Tea Party primary opponent, who got very nasty with, never endorsed him and still seems like he won't. There could, you know, 1% of these Tea Partiers either vote, I think there's a Libertarian candidate, and their vote for the Libertarian candidate or stay home. That could be the difference. Any little thing could be the difference here, because I think it really will be that close. So... you know, I'll take every negative McConnell thing I can get, as far as I'm concerned.
And give me your sense of what's going on in North Carolina. We've got there's a big voting rights rally in Raleigh. I think it was either today or yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I think President Obama is headed down there. You know, this is.
I think Hagan's running. You know, she's running a very smart campaign. Are you talking about the Senate race there?
Yeah,
I assume.
Yeah.
I think we're going to hold that. I mean, I think she's running, you know, she ran a terrific race against Louie Dole and ousted her when she won in 08. And I think she's running a good race now. Tom Tillis, the former House Speaker there, happens to be a very flawed candidate. You know, came out at one point, said he was for Obamacare, then he was against it. He can't seem to figure out what the hell he is for. He is for a personhood amendment that would outlaw all sorts of forms of birth control for women, which is hurting him. I mean, North Carolina these days has, you know, you've got Charlotte, you've got the Research Triangle. It's trending in a more socially progressive direction, and he's, you know, he's a caveman on social issues. And I think she's got the right kind of moderate profile that works well there. And she's also pushed some very sort of populist issues, too. So, no, I mean, you know, I think we win that one. I think it's sort of a, you know, there's some others where we're in more danger. I'd be more concerned about a place like Arkansas. You know, Mary Landrieu in the past has shown an ability to hang on in a tough state, but Louisiana is never easy. So, I mean, to me, I think we win North Carolina.
Do you think we got any shot at Georgia?
Not a lot, no. I think we have a shot at making it close enough that they have to spend money and time. I don't think it, so far, Michelle Nunn to me doesn't seem to be. She's got the name, which is helpful, and she seems to raise money pretty well, but she doesn't seem to have the kind of personality that Allison Lundgren Grimes has, which is what you need, someone who will just get people because they're mad at the Republicans, but will attract people to their personality. She seems very cautious and very, you know, she doesn't seem like she's willing to sort of, you know, really sort of take a chunk out of Perdue and attack him. Maybe if they can replicate, you know, the originally Newt Gingrich produced, in, you know, a man from Georgia, ads against Mitt Romney, because Perdue definitely is somebody who likes firing people, too.
Right.
And his company, I think she just went after him. His company had a bunch of sexual harassment suits. I'm not saying we don't have a shot. I guess maybe we have a shot, but I don't think it's as good as Kentucky.
Wow. All right. Well, you know, and I remind people, you know, the reason why this interests me more than perhaps most elections would. I guess one of my big concerns is obviously there's no scenario where we're going to get a lot of legislation passed going forward that you and I are going to appreciate over the next 2 years. The big issues for me, of course, when it comes to the Senate are the Supreme Court nominations. And frankly, you know, I count me among those few. I don't hear a lot of people talk about it, but I'm very concerned at the prospect of President Obama with a Republican Senate and House because I don't know. It's, you know, we've had to rely on, in many respects, on the intransigence of Republicans over the past 6 years in preventing some of the worst legislation going forward that President Obama has offered up, right? And I'm just concerned about what happens with a Republican Senate and Republican House and President Obama looking to make his imprint. Now, you know, maybe it's just about him, you know, pursuing executive actions in the event that it's all Republican in the Congress. But I don't know. I mean, you know, this week they announced what sounds to me is a very it's encouraging insofar as that they're looking for ways to work around the Congress. But in terms of dealing with climate change and signing this sort of hybrid, fashioning this hybrid binding sort of non-treaty, I guess, in the UN to deal with climate change. But I don't know. This is why I don't know why I need to sort of justify it to myself. But that's why.
I'm not worried about impeachment. Because if they want to go ahead and do that, be my guest. Go for it. You know, I mean, you'll destroy yourselves. So that's not why. But, I mean, when it comes to getting sort of certain people in regulatory agencies and being the party that decides what is going to be voted upon and how to craft what, you know, how they're going to try to at least craft budgets and things like this, it's clearly better to have the Senate. Obviously, if we try to put somebody on the Supreme Court, if that were to come up, they would filibuster anyhow. would be my guess. But if we were in the majority, then we would make the rules and we could decide that, guess what? We're not going to let you filibuster on that anymore. So there's that too. Whereas, you know, if they're in the majority, I guess, forget about it. Right? So, I mean, there are reasons to want to hold the Senate. And frankly, you know, these crazy people are in control of a number of state legislatures, too many governorships, some of which they're going to lose, which is nice. And the House. And the House is literally bedlam. You know what I mean? I mean, it's an insane asylum with these people. So, I mean, do we want them to control the Senate, too? I just think, you know, in general, you want crazy people to control as few levers of power in your government as possible. Right. Or if you're at the Supreme Court, which they also control.
Right. All right. Well, let's go forward. Obviously, we're going to be talking more about this. I just also want an excuse to mention we're now, I think, 12 days away from the New York State primary. I don't know. Give me your sense. Is Zephyr Teach out? And is there a certain amount of momentum that you sense? I mean, we've had over this week. The New York Times did not endorse Zephyr Teachout, but they made a point of not endorsing Cuomo and of mentioning Zephyr Teachout, which is the biggest problem right now, name recognition. They endorsed her running mate, Tim Wu.
I know. Wow.
And that's pretty huge.
That's huge. The endorsements were huge. I think she's got a ton of momentum. The question becomes, is there enough time? I wish there were another month. You know what I mean? And then I think this would be, you know, I don't want to ever, everybody should work their hearts out and get out there, vote, volunteer, do whatever you need to do, you know, and I'm holding on to the fact that, again, these things happen, and whenever anybody says something can't happen, you have to remind them of things that did happen when somebody came from 5% in the polls to win. So can she win? Yes. I still think it's a hugely uphill climb. And the momentum is in our favor in terms of the endorsements, Sierra Club now and others, but damn, I wish there was a little more time.
Yeah, I mean, but that's sort of why they have the primary this way, right? I mean...
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's a pretty late primary as it is, right? I mean, it's a shame that this whole process didn't start sooner. If we'd had a primary opponent jump in a lot sooner this year, then maybe... You know, it could have even gone further than it has now. I mean, obviously, the Moreland Commission expose certainly is what started the massive momentum. So maybe, well, you know, it's hard to know, and I don't know what could have happened or would have happened. But I do wish she'd gotten in sooner and been making her case, because the question will now be how many people will hear that case before they go to vote.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well,
I hope enough.
Indeed. All right, let's talk a little bit about what's happening with ISIS. Yesterday on the program, we had Patrick Coburn on, the journalist from the Independent UK, and author of a forthcoming book on ISIS. You know, it's interesting. I've been, you know, reading so much about this, and there is basically two narratives. One is that this ISIS thing is could metastasize into something really horrible. And then the other narrative is there's a lot of hype involved here, and we shouldn't take it so seriously. And, you know, I've heard ranges. Everybody seemed to agree in, June or May of this year that we were talking about 8,000 to 10,000 fighters, and now nobody seems. I still hear 10,000, but then Coburn is telling me that somebody he talked to in the Iraqi military had a formula that suggested that it might be 50,000 to 100,000 at this point. Now, obviously, if you're an Iraqi in the Iraqi government, there's a certain amount of self-serving reasons for you to say that ISIS is
right
metastasizing in a way that is going, they're going to take over the world. President Obama yesterday, I guess, in a press conference, let me pull this up here. I'm on the road, folks, so I don't have.
He said he didn't have a strategy, which is there wasn't a strategy with ISIS, which is what leading all the right wing flying wombats to freak out?
Yeah, we don't have a strategy yet, he said during a White House news conference, referring to increased military action. Folks are getting a little further ahead of where we're at. The suggestion seems to be that we're about to go full scale on some elaborate strategy for defeating ISIL, and the suggestion that we've been we'll start moving forward imminently and somehow with Congress still out of town, they'll be left in the dark. That's not going to happen. Poor choice.
I find no strategy to be better than what is known as a Bush strategy. So there is that. And yeah, they're going to jump on him for that, but I think you have to see what's going on. I mean, these guys, the McCain, Graham, Lieberman, mentality has always been just jump in without figuring things out first. And obviously that was brilliant in Iraq because that's created this whole situation. You know, there are plenty of, I'm sure, soldiers and others who've joined ISIS. It's probably some in Syria, in a defensive maneuver to protect themselves from the Assad government. There are probably some others who've joined just because they need a meal and they need a way of earning a paycheck and they've got no chance at employment. You know, in other words, these groups are always sort of made up of not just the most radical adherents, but there's others that have joined because they're opportunists or they need to for some reason. And so who knows the exact size? The more of a vacuum there is in these areas, the more these guys will be able to recruit probably. But again, I think we need to look at it realistically. It's not to say we know our homeland can be hit because it has been before. So it doesn't mean we shouldn't take it seriously. Of course we should take it seriously. And of course we need to figure out what to do, in terms of stopping them. And hopefully we have smart people working on that. Hopefully, I say. But it's not something that, again, people are just, they're just a group of people. I mean, it's also known as Fox News that wants to jump from like one thing to the next and freak out. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, well, I'm tired of freaking out about Ebola, so let's move on to ISIS. We need clear-headed sort of analysis of what the situation is and how to best isolate the most radical adherents and how to take them out, quite frankly, or capture them. And without getting troops involved. Not an easy maneuver.
There was an AP piece that basically revealed new information that James Foley and three other journalists were, at least, were subjected to waterboarding by their ISIL captors. And
well, thankfully, we have the moral authority to criticize them on that now. Thank you to Dick Cheney and the rest of that sick administration that normalized torture in the United States so that we can't point out when other people torture innocent people how terrible they are. I mean, we can, but it makes it a little bit more difficult, doesn't it?
It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it's a very weird position to be in and where you have to argue, well, they behead people. So they're clearly worse than us.
Right.
That's pretty sad.
It's sad that you can't just say that we're right and they're wrong. It has to be, well, they're worse than we are.
Right.
They behead people and crucify people and do absolutely barbaric, terrible things from the 15th century, unlike the barbaric 19th century methods used by Dick Cheney.
I don't know what more there is to say about this. I mean, I've been vacillating back and forth as to just how seriously, the scope of the problem of ISIS as to whether or not, they're being contained. But I can't help but I wish I was actually in the office because I was thinking about this last night. I don't have my notes on this handy, but.
Are you traveling off to vacation, Sam?
I am. I'm already on the road, as it were. But when I think about what has been created here, and the notion of, I still contend that Dick Cheney, when addressed, when having to address the situation in Iraq now, I contend that he does not see this as a failure, and that in many respects, this is exactly.
Oh, yeah.
What they were after, which was, and if you go back and you read the Project for a New American Century, and for those of us who have joined us in the past 10 years, more recently, in following this stuff, the Project for a New American Century was a very prominent neocon think tank, I guess you could call it, and guys like Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Bill Pearl, Bill Kristol.
The usuals.
And they turned out multiple white papers over the course of from 93, I think, up until 2000. And the last one, or one of the more recent, prominent ones, I think it was in 98, really spoke about, and this is something that George Herbert Walker Bush talked about, the New World Order. And that New World Order, right, as envisioned by the Project for a New American Century, was just that this century was going to be a new American century. A lot of people refer to last century as the American century because of our ascendancy as an economic and military power. And so the argument was that in this new American century, with the absence of a second superpower, that the United States could become a hyperpower, and that the game plan was essentially to just simply try and foster or contain a series of regional conflicts so that on some level the rest of the world would be busy fighting itself and no right. one would contend with American hegemony. And on some level, that's what we're seeing here, right? I mean,
right. And also the hope, I think, on some level to them, too, is if they were to create this kind of dissension and this intra country battles and whatever, that they may all they would also be able to grab access to a lot more of the oil. So there's that part of it, too, I think. But yeah, what you're saying is exactly right. And these brilliant foreign policy theorists that they are, you know, somehow missed that out of that kind of pandemonium is usually, because again, as we were saying earlier, nature hates a vacuum, is usually where a group like Al-Qaeda or ISIS rises from.
Well, no, I disagree. I actually think that they were quite aware of that. And I mean, let's face it.
Well, then they're just dumb if that's what they want.
No, I do not. Think so. I think
you don't think they're dumb.
No. I don't think that they that they had a problem with that. I think they just simply have a different set of calculations, and I think that they realize that ISIS and Al Qaeda, for that matter, not an existential threat to the United States, and to the extent that it has cost the United States anything to get involved in this, I think they think that these are actually decent amount of price to pay. And
yeah, well, I guess it's because they were lucky enough not to be in a certain part of the Pentagon on the wrong day.
Right. Well, I mean, look, I think that is the case. I think that they have no problem with, you know, a couple of thousand people, you know, half a, you know, 5,000 military personnel dying in that war over the course of 10, 12 years. I think that's fine for them. I think they do not perceive that as a major price to pay. And then the dollars spent, much of those goes into corporations, into industries that they, if they don't directly benefit from, which they do in many instances, they also don't have a problem. I mean, and Michael's just IMing
me. Their friends do if they don't. Yeah.
Michael's IMing me saying plenty of people are competing with American influence, including China. Well, I think China has always been their the neocon concern, and that they believe that by embroiling many of these parts of the world in some types of low-level, containable conflicts, that it at least prevents China from amassing some greater influence in the
right. Well, building allies the way the Soviet Union had in the past. I mean, they've pushed this. They've pushed for more conflict and aggression towards China for a long time. That's
definitely
been one of their.
Definitely. And what I find just sort of stunning is that, you know, you just don't see any analysis about what we're facing in the Middle East as being anything other than this was a huge foreign policy blunder by these people. No, I'm not convinced in their minds that this was a blunder, because I'm not convinced this hasn't worked out more or less within the parameters in which they were hoping. It's conceivable that they actually believed that, or some segment of the neocons believed that we could make this free market paradise in Iraq. But I'm sure that the sense was like, look, if we don't, it's still, we've achieved our goals, which is that we've basically broken up any type of cohesion in that in that area, and therefore, without the cohesion, it can never be mobilized as an economic threat against us by someone like China. You know, it's not like China it's not like there's one lever to pull now to flip the switch. It's just everything is so fragmented in that region, and I think from the neocon perspective, things are going fairly well.
Yeah, I mostly agree with you. Where I slightly disagree with you is I think the goal is to have pandemonium and not to have any kind of cohesion. And I don't think they ever saw, you know, if a group like Al-Qaeda or ISIS rises that just sort of, you know, helps fight others in the region, that's one thing. I really do not believe they ever foresaw a group like Al-Qaeda being able to strike the U.S. homeland in the manner in which it did.
Oh, really?
Let me just finish this point. I don't think they saw ISIS becoming, if it really truly has 50,000 people and it really truly has gained some financial abilities from some of the cities it's taken over and places, I don't think they saw that happening in as large a form as it's happened either.
Well, they may not have predicted, ISIS, if indeed ISIS is that much of a force. And I'm not sure that we know exactly what the parameters are. But they certainly were more than aware of Al-Qaeda. They were certainly more than aware of Al-Qaeda's intent to strike this. I mean, I've told this story many times that Gary Hart related to us, to Janine and I, back in 2004 about his 21st century threat to America commission, 25, 50 people sitting around talking about what they thought the biggest threat to the United States was. And to a person, they all said non-state acting terrorism. And only one person said China. They went through the same thing in the second meeting. Same person says China. She never showed up again at the third meeting, and her name was Lynn Cheney.
But that's in a way, that's kind of my point, which is that I think that these neocons are so arrogant. They're so in love with their own college degrees, their fancy universities and the rest of it, and their own theories, Paul Wolfowitz and, you know, Mr. Intellectual. I think that the arrogance is such that they never believed that any group that formed over there, and there's a racist Western aspect to it too, would be able to come together in the form where they'd ever be able to pull off something like they pulled off.
Yeah,
here.
But it doesn't. My point is, I don't think they care about that. I don't think they perceive
they
that
not.
As problematic. At the end of the
but
day,
I don't think it's
problematic.
Yeah, and it may not be problematic. I'm just saying it's giving them too much credit to say they predict things correctly. They don't care, and they want a lot of the troubles that they've helped cause. I agree, but I don't think they ever predicted things that could rise up in the manner in which they did. And again, you're right. We don't know what ISIS can do still, and we don't know. It may be a completely overblown threat, and it's hard. You know, the worst part of all this, I think, is that, you know, like yourself, I think if I felt like I could rely on media and trust anything they tell me, maybe I'd have a better sense. But, you know, post Judith Miller, when it comes to stuff like this, I don't really ever know what I can trust and what I can't trust. So I'm not sure. But I really don't think these guys, you know, ever think that any kind of group could come together and challenge the United States in a way that they could hurt us either externally or internally at all. Because they're too arrogant to ever think that. And maybe it doesn't bother them that they did.
Right.
But
that's my argument.
You know.
That's within okay. the parameters of what they will not in any way implicate what their long-term strategy is. I mean, you know, here's the irony, right? ISIL and whatever, you know, if they ultimately do have a country, and they very well may have at this point, talk about the flypaper theory, right? It seems, you know, I don't know.
If they do form a country out of parts of Syria and Iraq and possibly even Lebanon and put together a kind of military fighting force and in some of those areas gain access to banks, oil, a variety of things to where they're, you know, ransom for kidnappings and other things. Well, you know, if neocons don't see that as a problem, then they're just dumb, which they may just be. They're Lin Cheney going to meetings talking about China. And that, you know, that's always been a problem, is that they think they know better than everybody else, and again, they do not.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure, buddy. Even when it's a little bit depressing.
When has it not been over the last 2 months?
The past couple months have been, I just found them really difficult months. Cliff Schechter, have a great Labor Day. We'll see you next
too.
Week, buddy.
All right. Take All care, right. Sammy.
Bye-bye. Folks, we're going to get to Matthew Film Guy in just a moment. I want to remind you can support this program by becoming a member today at majority.fm or majorityreportradio.com if you really want to go that route. It will forward you to majority.fm. It is your membership that make this show possible. You know, I've been looking at some advertising networks, and I've been told by most of these networks that liberal political podcasts don't generally attract a lot of advertising. And part of the other problem is that there's also, you know, I'm rather stringent about what kind of advertising I would do on this show, and you know, I enter into those relationships sounding a little bit annoying, I think, to these people, where I'm so uptight. Like, there's a series of companies that I will not work with. But nevertheless, we rely on you for the vast majority, 99% of our revenue. So if you enjoy the program on a daily basis and you want it to continue, if you enjoy it on a weekly basis and you want it to continue, please become a member today at majority.fm. As always, of course, you can support this program by spending zero money. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. There is absolutely no reason for you, if you buy anything from Amazon, not to buy it through our link. Zero reason. It is literally an investment of 2 minutes of your time. You go to majorityreportkickback.com. You click on the Amazon link. You bookmark it. It shows up on your bookmark menu. And anytime you buy something from Amazon, you buy it through that link first. You can also just do it as a one-off. You know, every time you buy something, go to majorityreportkickback.com and do it. But it's super easy, folks. And it does make a difference to us. I mean, every little bit does. That's the way we do it. Pick up a nickel here, pick up a dime there. Oh, look, I found a quarter. Now I have 40 cents. So there you go. And justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Oh, I know what I wanted to remind you about Just Coffee. And I just got this email, so I haven't had a chance to do it myself, but bear with me here. Just Coffee is attempting to raise some cash for one of their suppliers. I mean, this is what's so great about this company. They're employee owned, right? And they're fair trade. So they actually give a crap about the people who supply them with coffee. And one of my favorite Just Coffee coffees, of course, after of course, the Majority Report blend, because that's the best, is this Los Dioses, I think it's called. It's the one, it's like a good breakfast coffee. And apparently, I just heard from the guys and the gals at Just Coffee. They are really close at Just Coffee. They're in Madison with a cooperative of women coffee growers in Nicaragua who make this Los Dioses. And they obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, they're pretty psyched to support a group of women farmers in Latin America. Apparently, they've been hit with a fungus that basically destroyed their coffee production for the year. Then they, and I guess Just Coffee is trying to help them out with like switching out their coffee trees to a fungus resistant variety of tree. Then they've also been subject to a serious drought that basically has threatened all of their ability to grow their food. And now they've basically said, cooperative in Nicaragua has basically said, look, thanks for the help with the fungus-resistant coffee. We need actually to buy some seeds and replant our food crops because we're getting devastated in terms of food. So Just Coffee is trying to raise money to help this cooperative. So go to selfies. They're asking people to take selfies of themselves. A creative one if you can, but if you can't, you just take a selfie and hashtag it with hashtag selfies, numeral 4, then the word seeds, S-E-E-D-S, with the picture, and it will go up automatically to selfiesforseeds.com. We're going to put a link at the front page of majority.fm. Michael and Matt will be taking selfies of themselves. I will take a selfie of myself. We will hashtag it, and it will show up on that site. And there you can donate. You can pledge some money to Selfie for Seeds to help these people out. It's a very good cause. The people at Just Coffee, of course, are great, and they've been, you know, supportive of this program for years. So if you can do so, please help them out. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Matthew Film Guy in just a moment. Oh. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Hey, just a reminder, too, Matt wants me to tell you to give us a good review on iTunes. When you give us a good review on iTunes and when you subscribe through iTunes, even if you're a member, it pushes us up in the rankings and gets more people interested. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's Casual Friday. One of our regular, and some people say the best, movie guest that we have, that some people say the worst, with all due respect.
Really?
Yeah, really. But more people say the best than say the worst. And, you know, in this era of, he said, she said journalism, if you're getting complaints from both sides, it means you're doing something right. So, of course it's Matthew Film Guy. We don't have the, normal Matthew Film Guy, theme song. So I'm going to let Matthew choose. Do you want, my daughter singing Move Like Jagger? When she was 8, or where has the dog gone when she was, like, I don't know how old, young?
Well, I know if I choose Moves Like Jagger, it will be in everybody's head for the rest of the day. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but every time I've heard her sing that, it's stuck in my head. And I don't think I've heard the other one. But, you know, the third choice is I could sing it.
All right, let's do Move Like Jagger. Now, Matthew can't hear this, but
I know how it goes.
This is your
thank you.
Oh. Okay. Just shoot for the stars. If it feels like a name from my heart. If it feels like it can take me away and make it okay, I swear I'll behave.
I should tell people I am not playing the instruments. It's like found a.
You wanna know? Yeah, I would take it. You say I'm okay. My ego is bad. I don't give a shit. And it goes like this. Take me by the tongue and I know you. Kiss me till you're drunk and I'll show you. Want the moves like that? I got the moves like that. I got the moves like that. I don't need to try to control you. Look
all
into
right.
my eyes and
there
I
we go.
Own
yeah.
you.
That's got everybody
like
in
that.
The mood.
I got
yeah, apparently I started off a little bit low, but sometimes that's best. Matthew Film Guy, how are you?
I'm great, Sam. I'm sitting here with my steaming cup of a Majority Report blend coffee from justcoffee.coop, which I will add is my favorite blend of all the ones I've tried from them.
Oh, now that's
so
huge, folks,
well.
Because Matthew, of course, you know, was an early guest on WTF, and they had a WTF blend before the Majority Report blend. I mean, so that's a big endorsement.
Indeed. I do also occasionally buy the WTF blend, but
you're trying to cover your bases.
Well, but I'll say this, not unlike the man himself, you have to really be in the right mood to consume that one. So, but the Majority Report blend is, I go to it all the time. And I've tried a bunch of other ones from them and always using the Majority Report coupon code. But I keep coming back to this blend. It's really good.
I love it. What yeah. I want is somebody out there who's got a coffee shop and gets they can get you can, you know, you contact Just Coffee. They'll sell you a ton of coffee, but you got to try and see if you can use the coupon code.
I'm not against shilling for it in my local coffee shops. You know, Astoria is just like sprouting, you know, hipster coffee shops like nobody's business.
Yeah,
here,
when
so.
Do you get priced out of Astoria, Matthew?
As soon as I switch apartments, I think. You know, I've been here long enough that I'm firmly entrenched in rent control. But yeah, I'm looking around for other places for me and Marion. It's almost like I'm already almost priced out if I wanted to move. But, you know, it's close. It's borderline.
Now, you've been in that apartment for
17 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man. You should go and you should be redoing it yourself at this point.
I basically have been, Sam. You haven't been here in a while, but I've redone the floors. I've redone the kitchen floors. I've redone, you know, I've put up shelves and painted and done a bunch of other stuff. I've put down new carpet in the living room, which I have carpet. So, yeah, over the years, I've definitely upgraded this place. And
you know, the pipe dream is that it goes co-op and I buy it, but my landlord's not thinking that way.
Right. Yeah. Highly unlikely. Well,
but meanwhile, I'm enjoying the neighborhood. It's, you know, I love this neighborhood.
Yeah. And it's getting better, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not over flooded with like sort of hipstery douchey stuff, like maybe some parts of Williamsburg have started to be. So it's, you know, it's sort of holding its own character while certain things like, you know, organic grocery stores and nice coffee shops and that kind of thing comes in to make it a little bit, you know, a little cushier.
And you still got that diner, right?
Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah, the Neptune Diner, that's not going anywhere. But, now, you know, we've got the Astoria Park and the Astoria Park pool, giant swimming pool. We got the Museum of the Moving Image, which is like an amazing resource for, you know, Matthew Film Guy. Shows amazing movies and has events. And so there's all sorts of shit around here. Pardon my cursing.
I understand. Now, Matthew, do you watch the Emmys? Does that have any interest for you whatsoever?
Yeah, actually, I watched it this year. You know, Mary is, I think, a lot more motivated to watch it. But once I start watching it, I enjoy it, especially when it's, you know, shows that I actually watch, like Breaking Bad, I was a big fan of. So that was fun to see them celebrate their show there. Yeah.
I did not see much of it. I ended up realizing a couple of my friends had won, and so I had to go back and I had to go back and view it. And I should also say,
well,
Bob's Burgers won.
Sarah's win was my favorite moment of the night. That was fantastic.
I had no idea that she was even nominated. And
yeah, me neither.
And I will say that I did. It is Name Drop Friday, so I will say I had coffee with her the other day. She was in town. And I will tell you, she was not, you know, the big story was that she was supposedly high during the time.
Right, yeah, her liquid weed or
yeah,
whatever it was.
She was not.
Yeah, I could tell.
She said she watched the video of herself and it looked like she was, but she was not. She did not anticipate winning at all, though. And so she was very surprised.
Right, I could tell that, too. That, I mean, that was, you know,
she had
no
idea.
And I loved her speech.
The only thing that bummed me out about it was, Louis won, writing, but he should be winning. How does he not win the directing award?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure who won in that category.
I think it was like Modern Family.
Well, that was going to be my guess. They're like some juggernaut and I've never seen one frame of that show. So I really can't speak to that. It's, you know, Weird Al's song about it was, I think, my favorite thing, related to that show. Did you see his like sort of a musical number parody of all the
No, I didn't.
Songs?
I saw that he did that and maybe I watched the video for like a second, but
Well, he said that the Modern Family, they're modern because they have two gay guys in them. You know, it just felt like such a gimmicky show to me to start. Maybe it's great. It's won all these awards, but I've never been compelled to tune into that.
Well, but you know what? Now that we're on it, let's talk a little bit about Weird Al Yankovic. All right? I think there's a real problem.
Sure.
You know, this
whole institution.
Yeah, but you know what? Not, I don't. I
yeah, you let's
know,
hear it.
Well, you know, it's just. I just think there's a real problem with comedy at the moment, where it is not. And maybe this is just me being a curmudgeon, and you know, I'm not in the comedy world really in the way that I was. You know, I'm not actively writing.
Wow, that must have been hard to get out, but I appreciate your honesty.
Are you being facetious?
Not really.
Well, I mean, as late as a couple of years ago, I was writing comedy scripts. I haven't written one in ages, and occasionally I go on an audition for, you know, but it's really more acting, and you know, so I'm not in the comedy world really.
Right. Well, the loss is ours, Sam. The loss is ours.
But yes, it is. But the reality is that I, you know, and maybe I just came from a different era. But I just find that there is something that has happened with the sharing economy. Okay, like you know, in the podcast world, 50% of all podcasts are comedy podcasts. 50%.
Are the other 50% movie review podcasts?
I mean, very possibly, right? I don't know. I don't know how that breaks down, but
yeah.
But and for comedians, a lot of the money that they're making these days, not the tippity top ones, but the things that are springing them are sort of like new media. Is new media things, you know, people becoming big on YouTube, and that helps them tour. They're doing a podcast, you know, and it helps them tour. And there's a quality now that is necessary where you need to build a network of support, and you can't really afford to be critical about people in the way that. When I was coming up in comedy, and, you know, part of it was, you know, as part of a comedy school that was sort of anti-comedy on some level, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way.
Definitely.
But in when you're, you know, and comedy is sort of like there is an art, there is a quality of art about it. I mean, like when you have schools, you know, you have schools of art, right? But you have schools of comedy. And.
Right.
And a big impetus is to react to what is happening in the comedy scene to change the culture of comedy. That's just the way
to be truth tellers.
That's just the way that good art is created, it seems to me, too, right? Is in reaction on some level to the art that's come before it.
That's true.
And I don't think there's room for that anymore. You all – there's a quality that's going on with comedians now, it seems to me. Maybe I'm just too Twitter-centric about this, where people are just like, that's great. Everybody's just so supportive of stuff that I don't find to be very good. And
okay,
I'm sorry.
So I agree.
I'm getting
totally –
what I'm getting around is like Al Yankovic is an example of that. I mean, I don't begrudge him. Good for him. He is making money by doing parodies that are suitable for 12-year-olds. But when you have fully grown adults saying, like, this is great, I don't believe them.
Right.
I don't believe them.
Look,
there's
two things for me. Okay.
And it's like almost like you and I have switched personas now, right? Because you're the one who's usually hypercritical of culture.
You know what? That's the thing. Is it certain culture, maybe this is like Uber pretentious, but certain culture to me is like it's beneath that kind of serious contemplation. You know, it's like
it's pretentious.
You know, it's just like, okay, that's nice, but it's like to take it seriously enough to really dig into it and, you know, like sort of take it seriously is almost pointless. So Al Yankovic is
I'm not taking him seriously. What I have a problem with, and I don't care, like I say, like enjoy, folks. You know, you know, I don't have to watch it. But the embracement that has taken place, if that's a word, by you know, serious comedians, I find that problematic because that's indicative of another problem.
So do you feel like that is pushed out some people who would otherwise be a little more firebrand, a little more critical? I mean, I feel like there are some people who fall prey to that. I mean, maybe even you could say that about Mark and his podcast. That he has to be a little
there's
more,
some of that. There's some of that there. Like, he just knows, you know, the secret to this sharing economy is that you don't really be critical of people. You got to, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, it's kind of like it's the same thing with the fallen journalism.
Yes.
No, I know what you're saying, but you have to say, and I've heard you say this before, and I generally agree with it. It's like you want access, just like a journalist will not print something that makes someone look bad, so they give up their access. There's that same kind of, you know, they say that artists tell the news that stays news, and sometimes you have to be a little less diplomatic or a little less political about it. So I totally agree with your general premise. As far as Weird Al Yankovic, it's like he's such a marshmallow fluff of a thing that
saying,
it's like, who cares?
No,
you know, like,
I don't
he's not otherwise going to be excoriating the power elite. You
you're
know?
Missing my point. I'm not criticizing him. I'm not criticizing him. I don't care.
Yeah.
What I'm criticizing is that his re-emergence and re-ascendancy is a function of this sort of like nerd culture slash you know, we're all just going to get on board with certain things so that we don't alienate other people. So that we're not the problem. You know what I mean? And
I don't know what people. I think I understand you, but I don't know what people gain from getting on board the Al Yankovic train. You know, I don't see what that's a huge like.
Once
sort of political
one or two people do, then everybody does because then you're part of the club. And
all I can tell you is I remember loving his albums when I was 12 or, you know, even younger. And to hear a new one, I'm not going to run out and buy it, but it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I had a lot of pleasure in that when I was a kid. So I think it's probably much more as much a function of nostalgia and kind of comfort food in your pop culture than it is some sort of a hive mind that, well, one person liked it, so two people are going to like it. But I do think that what you're saying in the Twitterverse, where everything is picked over and, you know, you're building a brand and trying to get the most eyeballs on your stuff, I think that is a function of a kind of politicalization of comedians. But you don't hear that inside a comedy club. You know, I don't think a lot of that is translating on the ground. And I still think you can find certain comedians, love them or not, that are willing to, you know, break through that sort of political line. But it's a general coarsening of the entire culture to be sort of like what you're saying. You know, you wash my back, I wash yours. You know, we're trying to get Teacher's Lounge out there, right? So we just finished the last episode of Teacher's Lounge, and you want to go on every show you possibly can. And Ted went on Opie and Jim, and he went on there talking about Ferguson, and it became like this shitstorm of people. You know, it was actually pretty amazing, but he was willing to, you know, go on that show and talk from his perspective as an activist, as someone supporting the rights of people to not be shot by police. And it was, I don't know if it helped the show. It definitely brought attention to it. But, you know, I just, in my personal experience, I can see how that you might want to be a little more political. And he stuck to his guns. And I thought that was pretty awesome in that environment where, you know, you turn as many people off as you do turn them on. But
Opie and Jim?
Well, I guess that's what they're calling it now. Yeah, the other guy's not there anymore.
Opie and Jim.
Yeah, and I guess, I give Jim Norton credit. He's the star of the last episode, which is actually, if you have a Roku, it's exclusive on Roku for a week. He's a guy that I totally disagree with every single sort of political viewpoint he holds, but I still find him hilarious, and I give him credit for being able to sort of express himself and stay open to alternate points of view without sort of, without kissing ass or without sort of, just completely reversing himself. So there, even though I don't politically agree with him, I think he's, you know, saying things that would otherwise get him, you know, politically banned. I mean, I guess he's got his group, but, you know,
I love the fact that you're saying this because one, it's, you are actually doing what I've been criticizing right now, right? You're kissing, Jim Norton, blocked Matt on Twitter.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So not so open, I think. See what I mean? Like, he's just, Matt's out of the club. He went too far, but not, not anybody.
Well, I don't know anything about that, Sam, but you can tune into Teacher's Lounge at.
Right, exactly, right? That's what I'm talking about. We just witnessed this whole thing.
Well, that's why I brought it up, Sam. It's a legitimate issue, but it works both ways. You know, you can sell yourself out to reach a larger audience, or you could at least try to meet people halfway and say, you know what, I made something I'm proud of, and I'm willing to go into an environment where they don't already agree with me. And
that's fine.
And
that's fine. I'm not talking about Ted. I don't fault him for going on the show. I'm faulting you for trying to, it's the way you're justifying it.
Justifying it as what? As,
oh, just like, you know, I really have real respect for Jim Norton, blah, 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 blah. Come on.
Well, it just happens to be true, Sam. I mean, it doesn't have to be politics or showbiz.
All right.
But I appreciate the your appreciation of the irony there.
Yeah, I certainly do. Teacher's Lounge, I haven't watched it yet, but it is like high on my list. I literally have probably over the past 3 weeks about 8 emails to myself to watch it. But it just...
Great. Well, it'll take you less than 45 minutes to watch the whole season of 10 episodes once they're all out.
And it's on Roku. Is that what you're saying?
Well, each episode goes on Roku for a week exclusively. So right now it'll just be the Jim Norton one on there. But if you go to YouTube and type in Teacher's Lounge or Thunder Shorts, or even just go to thundershorts.com, you could watch it on there too, which is the people who are distributing it.
So I don't understand. So what is the exclusivity?
It's not anywhere else right now. For a week, it's only on Roku, that episode, that one episode of Jim Norton.
So I got to watch the other episodes on that on the computer, and then the one Jim Norton episode, I got to go on to Roku?
For a week, or actually until Wednesday. Next
Who
Wednesday.
Devised that horrible marketing strategy?
Well, why is that horrible? It's
I want to watch all of them, and now
yeah,
I have to go to two different
yet.
Devices.
I want
to
watch every episode of Game of Thrones.
Oh,
for the
they're
next
not,
two.
They're not
aren't
all out
yet?
Yet? Oh, okay. I no, thought
that's the last one. Each As they come out each week, they got an exclusivity on Roku before they come out
okay.
to the public.
Okay, now
yeah,
I
there
it.
You go.
All
there
right.
you go. So next week, they'll all be available online.
All right, well, assuming...
So right now, nine of them are.
Assuming... Matt just IM me and said, so for 1 week, Roku users are exclusively tortured by Jim Norton. So, Matthew, what –
Got a big heart.
Presuming I'm going to watch Teacher's Lounge, what else should I watch? What else do you have for a recommendation? Whatever happened
movie,
to like – you remember that recommendation you gave me? I can't remember. What was it? It was the two-part – there was two movies. There was two parters, and it was in Brazil, and it was an action film. Was it in Brazil, or do you know what I'm talking?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Elite Squad.
One and
yeah.
two. Yeah.
Yeah. More
Did
of
you
that.
Watch those?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I want.
Okay.
What do
you?
You
know, not too many great movies like that straddle the line between sort of a politically sensitive and action film. I mean, the guy that made Elite Squad went on to make RoboCop, the remake. So I mean, that shows you where that's. You know, that's even worse than going on people's talk shows and shilling your work. But I'm always looking for the sort of the thinking man's action film for you. But this week I don't have one of those. But I did want to briefly touch on whether or not you're continuing to watch Continuum, because that's a show that I considered recommending to you, even though it had some structural problems at the beginning.
I'm glad you asked that question.
Yeah. Because I found it fascinating. The first season is a procedural, but it gets away from that in the second and third season,
where
it really gets better.
I don't know why I hung in there. The first season, by midway through, I was like, this is garbage. I was like, there was it was literally just because, I don't know, I just, I'm watching The Killing with Nikki, and so I couldn't watch that alone. And then I just didn't want to watch the news at times, and you know, I wasn't committed to starting a new TV show, and I didn't want there was no movie because I can only watch like 45 minutes, and so I worked my way through Continuum, and I like on multiple occasions I was like, I got to stop watching this because this is garbage. There were times like in that first season where I was like, this is not only like crappy material, it's also like crappily done. It just seems cheesy. And it's like turning into like I've watched shows that I've parodied. It was almost like Cobra, like that Michael Dudikoff show from 20 years ago that I used to mock.
Yeah.
But I will say I somehow struggled through it. And I'm like, you know, let's see if this turns in the second season, because a lot of times what happens with these shows is the people don't think they're going to get picked up, or they don't plan more than the first three shows. And then sometimes if they're inexperienced or they're caught off guard, they're just struggling to get through that first season. And, you know, episodes 5, 6, 7, 8, the middle is always the hardest for an arc like this. And they're just putting it with filler to stretch it out. Like, we could do 6 of these, but to do 12 is really hard. And then they regroup. They hire quality writers. They've got more of a budget. They know where things are going. And I have to say,
they feel like they can drop some of the hammers on some plots they were holding back.
But it's also just that they bring in people who are a better caliber, who they didn't get originally. And I have to say, the first two episodes of the second season, this is not a genius show. But it's getting a little bit more sophisticated, and it's less about like. This hot male cop and this hot female cop are just hanging out together. And also, you know, we put, you know, she wears a weird suit. And that's it. I mean, on some level, the return of the weird suit is better, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, the sci-fi elements were always what my first interest was.
Yes, when they got away from that for a couple episodes, like, here she's going to do just a random case that will try and tie into the main storyline.
Yeah, liberate.
It makes it sound like it's legitimate. That I found just, I almost vomited in my mouth. But
right.
So I'm going forward with Continuum, but it's not going to be, it may be in trouble when, things like Survivor and Empire Boardwalk come back.
Right, Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get your take on what I think is the one of the best, most sort of original or sort of also sort of disturbing elements of it, which is that the main character is sort of the representative of this sort of fascist future corporate Congress. You know, like you try to your loyalties are split between the people in this liberate terrorist group who are clearly sort of sociopaths and psychopaths, but what they're talking about is this sort of Occupy sort of philosophy. And then on the other hand, the ostensible main character is sort of the, fascist law and order.
Well, the problem is, and this is what's actually lacking about this show that was there in Battlestar Galactica. There's really no exploration of that. There's no,
There becomes more.
That's fine. But I can tell
it.
You, at this point, it's just like Team Blue and Team Red. There is no, than just sort of like, we sum
it's
it up,
quote.
Corporations are bad, and, corporations
and that is the part that,
that's the part that I missed.
The most. Yeah,
that's the part that I miss. That's what made Battlestar Galactica so great, is that you had a decent amount of, there was some action, there was some sci-fi, but really what it was just a very thoughtful story about human dynamics and politics, and it's absent so far from Continuum. You can tell that it's like it's for, it's for dumber, it's dumbed down.
Yes, believe me, this is no Battlestar Galactica. That's one of the best shows of all time and the most sort of sophisticated television sci-fi shows of all time. But I do think it's worth hanging on, and just to wrap this part up, because I don't know if this is interesting to everybody, but struggle.
We've been talking about it for 10 minutes.
Well, to conclude, she does sort of struggle with her allegiance, and not to spoil too much with it, like that.
Well,
that
of course, but it's also going to be tied in.
I
know where the show is going, and it's going to be tied into sort of the personal issues too, which are going to split her, which bums me out because I hate seeing where shows are going, but I've written a bunch of this stuff, and so I usually, it's very rare that I get surprised. That's why, like a show like Game of Thrones or Battlestar Galactica was so great. It was because.
Yeah.
More often than not, it was very rare.
You can't get ahead of it.
Very rare, even with, until like maybe the last season and a half on Breaking Bad that I didn't know what was happening next. But, all right, so is that it?
No, I've got a film for everybody to go out and watch. I wanted to take a few minutes to stump for one of the most maligned Hollywood movies of all time. And maybe you've seen it, maybe you like it, but I recommend that everyone go out this weekend and watch Ishtar by Elaine May. It has the reputation of being, one of the biggest flops of all time in box office versus budget-wise it was, but it's actually a really interesting movie. It's not my favorite Elaine May movie, and I've recommended, I think, a few of her other ones on this show. It is the movie that basically ended her directing career, but it's actually really brilliant. The first half is extremely brilliant. And it's kind of a showbiz satire, sort of mixed with a sort of satire on U.S. adventurism in the Middle East. So I think it's a great movie to take in these days of all sorts of crap going on out there. And it's also sort of like a Hope and Crosby parody, but if you don't get that reference, I think you can still enjoy the movie. Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty are hilarious, playing these kind of schlubs trying to make it in music business. They luck into a job working for the CIA, little do they know, playing places in a fictional Middle East country. And it's satire, and they are hilarious. They're super dry, super droll. And the movie does not at all deserve the reputation that it has as some sort of a horrible waste of celluloid. It's
Matthew?
A really good movie. Yeah.
Matthew, this is what I'm going to give you. You know, that's a movie I have never seen. And I am a huge Elaine May fan. And sold. That's exactly the tone of a movie. If it wasn't an action movie, because, you know, I'm going to watch this one with Nikki, and we may have some friends over. Maybe we can watch it with them. It's bingo. Sold. Good job.
Great. Well, enjoy, Sam.
And folks, watch Teacher's Lounge, except for the Jim Norton episode.
Yeah, he plays the school security guard, and he has a lot of fun with his sort of right-wing security state mentality. So even if you're not a fan of him, you will, I think, enjoy that show.
I know. I mean, it's just awkward that he was doing that show and I wasn't. All right, Matthew.
Next time.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Sam. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure. Matthew, film guy. Folks, we're going to go a little long today. The number, if you want to be a part of the program, and I will endeavor to take a call today, if I can, but I have some, IMs to read. On Monday, it's Labor Day. We will not be here live. We will be doing our, 646-257-3920 is the number. I guess it's going to be a freebie Friday. Monday is, our famous Labor Day show. It's not famous, but it is our Labor Day show. It's a compilation that I've run for the past couple of years, actually, of a compilation of a compilation of some Labor Day speeches. And so if, you know, you're listening to the program at that time, on Monday, you will hear that compilation of Labor Day speeches. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM or on the app. You can get the app at majorityapp.com. Let's go with In the Sticks. I hope Dick Cheney et al. Are enjoying the effing can of worms they opened. Read Torture. Savages indeed. Koladik, if the show is happening, you should know the app didn't notify the show today and the YouTube stream never started. I would randomly blame Michael for this. How about having Eminem read the IMs during the interviews to notify you of good questions for the guests? That's not a bad idea, actually. That's not a bad idea. Cliff is wrong on Georgia. Huge black population. None is up with an ad just like that anti-Romney ad Newt ran. You know, and also, you know, the other thing is that we've talked a lot about the Moral Monday movement in North Carolina, but my understanding is that a lot of that has been also going on in Georgia. Militant Apathy. Have any of you watched The Strain? Great show. The Strain. I'm not familiar with it. Never even heard of it. That's the thing today. The entertainment industry is so stratified. Chem Champion, listening live for the first time in weeks, been utilizing my PhD in chemical engineering by roofing. Love the William Lozonic interview. I've been spreading it around to my wonky friends. Might compete with the Suzanne Mettler, The Submerged State, for my favorite wonky interview. Wow. Re-Matt going to Disney World. Pleased to hear that his inner child, much like the one in his basement, is still very much alive. Creepy. Matt says, I watched The Strain. It's a Guillermo del Toro show. Never seen it. Bush and Chains, clueless and stupid as usual. Obama adopts G.W. Bush's first shoot first, ask questions later. Redneck foreign policy. Obama admitted Thursday he still does not have a strategy to fight his U.S. taxpayer-funded al-Qaeda buddies. I mean, Islamic State jihadists in Syria. I really don't get where you get the information that we funded them. As you know, you go with the to war with the army you have, not the army you might want to wish or have at a later time, says Donald Rumsfeld. Sam, I love the way you feign moral high ground over the PNACers. Obama has started how many illegal military actions, installed how many puppet regimes, committed how many war crimes, constitutional human rights violations. And the best part, you repentantly vote for it. This is sickening to listen to. If you and Cliff want to have a circle jerk party, then wipe your mouth and do it off air. Keep not voting. That's really working. Umar Shami, BioShock was released on iTunes 2 days ago for iPhone 5 and iPhone and iPad 4 for $15. 7 years after its release, still among the top 10 best reviewed games of all time, with a 96% on Metacritic. If the internet battle that ensued after Roger Ebert asserted that video games could never be considered art, BioShock was one of the most commonly cited counterexamples. I shall email you tips to maximize your playing pleasure. Thank you. I may very well do it. Kenny Pick, I'm dibbing the ambient sound of crickets or locusts in the undisclosed location. It's giving you a Lake Wobegon feel. Thank you. To Weird Al credits, he did knock Alex Jones a bit around in one of his new songs. A Square, Sam, comprehensive but depressing interview yesterday. Also because where can people get this information in the mainstream media? No, from Majority Report. Freeloader folks, just subscribe. Thanks for mentioning Market Basket. A few weeks ago, Chris interviewed one of the top managers who got fired after working there like 20, 30 years for participating in the strike. And it was just heart-wrenching. So glad to hear one happy ending. This story is intertwined with your interview with Lozonic. I can tell you stories about corporations now, in essence, a way to create value for CEO and some key shareholders. Period. End of story. Sam, MB2, have a great holiday. XRX, I think it's a bad idea to downplay the capabilities of any individual, especially when you have all the ideas, when all you have are ideas about said individual. Bush administrations knew of the impending attack in April 2011. Months later, we almost in September of 20 what? In April 2001. Months later, we were almost 3,000 people lost in one day. Follow that up with items like the Patriot Act and such. I'm not so sure people didn't have desires that seemed to be lining up adequately, if not perfectly conspiracy theorish, but it looks all too neat from where I'm sitting. I feel that I need to mention that when I said downplay, I meant underestimate. Ugly. Mila is chugly. Mila's awesome. Wow, Yorick, your girl's got a set of pipes. Go, Mila. Get that girl some lessons and an agent, and she can pay her own way through college. Christo, did you see that poor book sales promoted Paul Ryan to hawk his book by doing a stint as a guest host on Hannity's show yesterday? Looking forward to some potential random Ryan segments. I didn't know that. Cheney and Bushes, if you grew up with Weird Al, you'd understand, Sam. I'm 31 and I love Weird Al. His levers are more clever than probably a majority of comedians. He's not Carrot Top. Watch his Whatever You Like video on YouTube and try not to laugh. I double dog dare you. Your overall point about Twitter culture helping hacks is true, but Weird Al is a horrible example. Mutt 1126. Sam hates Weird Al. Say it ain't so. What about Uff? I don't know about it, but I don't hate Weird Al. I don't know. Weird Al, yank my dick. Why did Jim Norton block Matt on Twitter? And where does Matt go for advice on how to pick up transvestite hookers now? I guess Jim Norton does that. I don't know. Easy Reader, you can't rent or buy Ishtar, one of the funniest comedians of all time. Actually, it looks like you can stream it on Vudu, but you couldn't as of last year. Interesting. I don't have Vudu. Ishtar is hilarious. The songs are great, says PF1800. Cat says, I love Ishtar. Falcon, I agreed. Ishtar has been unfairly maligned. It has moments of Elaine May's satirical brilliance. Wow, Civics, totally on board with Ishtar. This is drawing people out of the... Oh, hey, buddy, I did email a song if you want to play it, says Jimmy Reefer Cake. I was not informed of this. Let me see if I have the ability to... Well, first, let's go to the phones, and then I'll give it a try. We'll go out with the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. You call him from a 718 area code. Who's this? Are you there? Oh, wait, I'm sorry. 718 area code. You there? Who's this?
Sam, it's Matt.
Oh, hi, Matt.
How are you?
I'm great. Why are you calling into the show? You're the.
I am calling because I wanted to check on it to agree with you with your Weird Al thing. Because so many people are hitting you for it.
All right. This is awkward.
So that's what I wanted to say. I mean, I think with Weird Al, especially, it's you know.
And you're a fan, aren't you? A fan of his?
Yeah, I mean, I used to really like him, and then I listened to that Emmy thing, and then I listened to some of the recent stuff he did. And you know what? Back maybe when he was the main player doing it, and there was no internet where people could share their own versions of things. Maybe he was the best out there, but now, I mean, you could hear some random guy do a parody song that's better than his, at least his recent stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not thrilled. I've said my piece about it. But all right, Matt, well, thanks for calling in, buddy.
All right, have a good Labor Day weekend, everybody.
Yeah, you too. All right, bye, Matt. It's a little bit awkward. But let's take another call. Calling from 817 area code. Who's this?
Hi, this is Daniel.
Hi, Daniel. How you doing?
From Texas. Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. What's up?
Great. Well, I was, kind of listening to the conversation you and Cliff were having earlier about, the project for the New American Century. And, it just kind of made me think about the fact that I only really heard about that maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So, which is kind of funny because, really, if you think, I think the Iraq War, as far as I understand it, was primarily based on that. So, I mean, it's just kind of funny that, in many ways, I hadn't heard about it until maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And it's probably because it wasn't written for a voter audience, more than likely.
Well, you know, it's very strange in some ways because if you read this document, it's quite clear on what the agenda was and why. And it's not like this is an obscure think tank. You know, the vice president of the United States was a signatory, I believe, to this document. I mean, it is strange that we do not, it was one of those things. So much happened during, the run-up to the Iraq War that anybody who brought that up was immediately marginalized, in part because they were necessarily an anti-Iraq war advocate. And so they were marginalized almost immediately. And I think that still lingers. There's this quality that when you say Project for a New American Century, people roll their eyes. Oh, my God, you're a conspiracy theorist. What? What do you mean? I'm just talking about what a white paper is. You know, it's like the Powell Doctrine. If it was, I don't know. I mean, signed not just by Lewis Powell. I don't know. It's surprising it doesn't get more attention, even today, to measure up. I'm surprised that writers don't write about it. I'm not surprised that I'm not watching, Don Lemon come on to CNN and say, ISIS is attacking, just like, the Project New American Century. But there's no writers who go back onto it.
Yeah. Well, I think, the common man, falls back on more simplistic propaganda. I mean, that's more or less, I think that's more of a policy thing than anything else that was written for the people who are going to be carrying out that policy. And for people like my parents who voted for George W. Bush, they didn't vote for the New American Century. They didn't realize it's what they were getting. They voted for, the anti-abortion stuff. So there's a difference between the propaganda that filters out to the common man, and that which is written for the policy folks or the folks who will be carrying out that policy. And that may be the reason why it doesn't get much attention, because largely the corporate media probably doesn't spend time with those types of talking points. That's the policy long stuff. They focus on the things that's the red meat for the typical viewer. The abortion stuff, the latest goings on in Ferguson, and there's like a little bit less about what's going on in the upper echelons of the power structure. I mean, propaganda, though, it's amazing, really, in that sense, that propaganda, whether you're talking about the high level propaganda that just the upper echelon seat and the lower level propaganda about abortion and gay marriage, stuff like that. It's amazing how, in many ways, I feel like that rivals, probably because of how we perfected it during the Cold War, it rivals even propaganda by places like North Korea. I mean, that's like little kid stuff compared to the propaganda that we see here in the U.S.
Let me take a little bit of issue with that. Just in this sense, is that it is – social issues are, you know – are very, I mean, obviously are hugely important in a lot of respects, that, you know, I mean, not the least of which, you know, if you're gay, being treated like a first-class citizen is a big deal. It's not an afterthought. And, there's also, I think, a pretty decent argument that, the more we are socially emancipated, the more that, women and African Americans and Latinos and just people in general share in they're emancipated socially and begin to sort of gain more power at the expense, frankly, of white males. Then, you know, it's also going to change the dynamic of theoretically. It may take a long time. And I think, you know, at least, you know, it's easy to buy into this theory too much. I think many people did with President Obama in some respects. But the more egalitarian our society becomes, theoretically, the less sort of the more democratic we will see, in foreign policy. But I got to jump. I appreciate the phone call.
Sure. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Somehow I got disconnected from chat. Let's a couple more IMs, and then we're going to Muggity T. Jones, Action Netflix, Machine Gun Preacher. The movie is way better than the name. Another good one on Netflix is Into the Furnace. Kyle, the issue you have with weird over support in comedy reminds me of the insular kind of faux support you find within an improv theater that takes itself too seriously, where it's more important that we're all participating in this thing than the thing being any good. Pumpkin, how many bags of Cheetos has Bush in chains consumed so far today? Jay Tingle, Ishtar is actually awe-inspiring. The humor always misses the mark, always in the same way. Each actor skews his character in such a way to remove any trace of wit. The story depends on the acceptance of the two main characters, which is impossible. It's indeed a parody of show business, of American intervention, I suppose. Is it mostly an execs an exercise in ego on the part of the stars and the director? Is it funny? Is Neil Simon funny? Look, I really like Who's the Caboose, but Ishtar is a thing that keeps guys like you on the margins, almost like bullying. Heaven's Gate has its moments. Ishtar is an affront. I haven't seen it. I'm going to watch it. If you must watch Ishtar, think before imposing it on your wife or friends. Then come back on the podcast and tell everybody how right I was. I, Johnny. Hey, Sam, I'm not sure if it's still in theaters, but did you see Life Itself, the documentary about the life of Roger Ebert? Great film. I highly suggest you see it. I haven't, but I noticed it's on, I think, like Apple TV. Jeremo, Sammy, thought you should know. Very clear audio today. Great show. Thank you, Jeremo. They're very kind of you. Kevman, I have a video recommendation. It's a debate that I had on the CBC arguing the motion. State surveillance is a legitimate defense of our freedom. Arguing for motion was former NSA director Michael Hayden and his partner, I guess, brought on for comic relief, Alan Dershowitz. Arguing against was a Reddit co-founder whose name escapes me and Glenn Greenwald. You can find it on YouTube if you type Greenwald versus Alan Dershowitz. Matthew Film Guy. Ishwar is streaming on Amazon in HD. Okay, thank you, Matthew Film Guy. Cry Pop Phil. Sam, I have to agree with you and strongly disagree with Cliff. The clear indication was there was threat in USA. Ignoring agent requests for search warrants on arrested terrorist laptop. Tenet with Clark running around like the hair on fire. How do you pretend we had no clue it was going to happen? I just don't think it was terribly relevant to what their game plan was. Mr. Fan, fair warning, Matt. Anita Sarkeesian manufactures her points on video games in order to impose feminist American values over the world video game market. Google Thunderfoot on Sarkeesian on YouTube. B, better review be a review of this movie on a future show, right? I presume you're talking about Ishtar. All right, let's go take one more phone call. You're calling from 626. Who's this?
Hi, Sam. My name's Francisco Picos.
Hi, Francisco. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
What do you got?
I wanted to call just to say that I've been a big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I became a member a couple months ago.
Oh, well, thank you very
much. I'm not really happy.
Hold on one second. You won't be able to hear this, but you still deserve a blowing the horn in your appreciation right now. All right, go ahead.
The main reason I called is I wanted to talk about the amount of power that we give prosecutors in criminal cases. My brother a couple of months ago was involved in a crime. Now, detectives had come to our house, and after they spoke to him, they didn't arrest him. You know, they basically told us at that time that, your brother seems to have been there, but he wasn't really involved, so we see no reason to bring him in. A couple of months later, we actually got a letter in the mail saying that there was a warrant out for my brother's arrest, which seems sort of odd because other than the incident that the cops had already said he was okay to go with, we had no, we didn't think there was any problem. So he went, he went to court to show up and figure out what was happening, and he was arrested on the spot. We later found out when we got a hold of them that they basically had decided, the prosecutor had decided, after all, to charge him with the crime, and he was facing 25 years to life.
Wow.
So we basically went from having the detective tell us, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it, he was there, he might have been around, but we don't feel that he has anything to do with it, to a few months later, my brother was facing 25 to life. But here's the really interesting part. We got a lawyer, which was a big, big burden on our family. And at the end of the trial, because we kept pushing it, we knew that my brother wasn't involved. At the end of the trial, my brother wound up getting a 2-year sentence from the special prosecutor. So, to me, this shows how badly our system is. They wanted to make their numbers, and they took a person that was, mostly innocent, and wanted to put him away for 25 years. And that fear makes you have to make really awful decisions, because they were telling us, your brother's facing 25 years of life. We want to give him 8 years in prison, as an offer. But fortunately for us, we had a really good lawyer, and he was able to get us down from 25 years of life to only 1 year. He's being found up in prison for 1 year.
Well,
and I'm certain that it has to do with the fact that we're Mexican American family. I don't think any other family would have, any non-minority family would have to face that type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, without knowing the details of the case, I don't want to get into the details of the case, frankly, and maybe you don't want to either. But, there are clear problems with prosecutorial discretion that go, frankly, in both directions on some level. The Aaron Swartz case, sticks out in my mind as too often these prosecutors are a little bit are too politicized. And, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from West Covina, which is just outside of Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of going after Latino criminals, I think probably for a prosecutor, is, you know, they perceive as good for their career. And I'm sure there's I'm sure that's part of it. And I'm sure also part of it is that there's a, you know, perception that like, OK, you know, we got a good chance of getting a conviction here because this family may not be able to have the means to have an attorney, or we get a good chance of putting somebody behind bars for, you know, getting a good plea deal. Look, you know, prosecutors sometimes can be overzealous. I'm not sure what the solution is. That's the only problem. I'm not sure what the solution is. But, you know, I'll look around to see if anybody's written anything on this, because it's an issue that I, you know, I'm only peripherally aware of. But I appreciate you calling in and talking to us about the story.
Well, I just want to leave by saying that one last thing. We were very fortunate in finding a lawyer that was able to give us a really good rate for what we did. It was still relatively expensive, but much less expensive than it would have otherwise been. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, poo-poo on the whole justice system, but, you know, it seemed to me that once we actually were willing to pay a little bit of money, all that 25 years and everything went away real fast.
Yeah, that is definitely an issue in our justice system. Money talks. And, you know, we've certainly talked about the inequality that exists in our justice system. And that is that's a real problem. And
that's one of the reasons I love your show so much.
I appreciate
I'm glad I got today off. I've been wanting to call in for a long time, and I'm so happy to have gotten to talk to you and tell you how much I love your show.
Well, thanks for doing so. I appreciate it. You know, one of the things that's quite clear is that, and one of the things that was sort of devastated by this sequester, states are responsible for funding a lot of you know, free defense attorneys. And the fact of the matter is that they're horribly overworked. They're horribly underfunded, and it creates an incredible amount of injustice. Cadet Sam, who is Jim Norton? He's the guy who took over for Anthony. He's a sort of a right-winger comedian. Avedon, Greenwald versus Dershowitz was the Monk debates. Here it is. And all right, that's our final IM of the week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to try and download Jimmy Reefer Cake's song and play it as a... Let's play this. It is a song about, let me see here, about Ferguson. So let's play this Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Today, this police state must stop today. They shot Michael Brown down in Ferguson, Missouri. My progressive liberal libertarian friends must work together to make this crap end. Today, this police state must stop today. These tears are real, hand me a tissue, yet you still complain that weed's my pet issue. Prohibition gives police a way to harass, something as common as just smoking grass. In Colorado, with safe and legal Mary Jane, we see a drop in violent crime, a drop in the pain, a boost in tax dollars, talking let it rain. But the hypocrites are always sure to complain. They complain about the dangers of selling legal weed, just like people complain when the slaves were all freed. Yeah, today. Stop this police state today. When the police walk the streets with malice and hate, the violence is guaranteed to escalate. Like the night at the bar with the fake ID, that cop didn't take too kindly to me. We're all afraid, we know the cops don't play. That's why at the Fish concert I ran away. My buddy Wheeler got busted out of Roanoke while I was hanging with him just trying to get a smoke. It was a stuff down from Seaton Street. Down in D.C., me and Puff Daddy would meet. He'd have 10 nickel bags of shitty brick weed for the next couple weeks, probably what I need. In a lot of numbers, I guarantee the city dealers end up in penitentiary. A police state we live in where justice is sold. I say legalize it now before we all get old. Today, this police state must end. Today.
Jimmy Reed for Cake. I don't have the applause button here, but so I'll hit this one. Very good point about marijuana being an excuse for cops. It certainly we heard Ben Stein the other day talking about this scary big self of Michael Brown who was on the marijuana. All right, folks. See you. On, like I say, Monday we will have a series of Labor Day speeches. Back on Tuesday, see you then, ladies and gentlemen. As you can see, I'm trying to. Here we go. See you. Have a great weekend, folks. Happy Labor Day.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive, between the 101 and the 5. Know how far the detour takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Shifted in and out.